I want you to feel anything about my content other than apathy. I don't care if you hate it. I don't care if you love it. I just don't want you to forget it. If I can get you to remember Aurum or me for 1 second, then I am afforded the next second. Whatever you're doing, be anything but boring.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by The Juice. Our mission is to squeeze out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals to help you push your brand to the forefront of the industry. Let's raise a glass. Welcome back to the Content Cocktail Hour. My name is Jonathan Gandolf, founder and CEO of The Juice, and your host of today's episode of the Content Cocktail Hour. I'm really excited about this one. We've got Adam Sokol, head of content at Aurum. Adam's one of my favorite marketers to follow on LinkedIn, always sharing some perspective and doing it in a fun way. So I'd really encourage you to go do the same. Adam, maybe before I ramble too much about some of your LinkedIn posting or some of your content strategy, first, I guess I got to welcome you back. You might be one of the first recurring guests of the Juice podcast journey, but welcome back. And in your own words, give us a little bit of your background and your role at Aurum.
Yeah, thank you. Excited to be back. I love being a recurring guest. So yeah, as you mentioned, I run content at Aurum, which is like a live conversation platform. We can talk about that later if we want. But my personal journey, I have been doing content marketing for about 16 years now. I started out at a company called Overdrive, which I'll give them a shout out if you are a fan of ebooks or audiobooks. They have a very popular app called Libby. You can borrow books completely for free. My job there was to promote that app and also hosted their podcast for about 8 years, where I interviewed authors every single week, which was a dream job for a book nerd of myself. And then I moved on to a company called Pluralsight, which is a complete left turn from promoting libraries and library content. Pluralsight is all about tools and upskilling for developers. So I was making content for developers, which was way less exciting. Learned a whole bunch there about content strategy. And now I'm at Aurum, where we are promoting content for sales leaders and sales professionals. Sellers are much more interested in content, which is great. So it's been a lot of fun. And we have a podcast similar to yours. It's called Bold Calling, where we talk sales strategies and all sorts of stuff. So excited to be here. Thank you for bringing me back on.
That's awesome. We should compare notes. I at a previous company, the team I was on, we helped create content for insurance brokers. So we can see between developers and insurance brokers who had more boring content. Cool. So this is a new iteration of our podcast. It is the Content Cocktail Hour. So we always like asking all of our guests, what are they enjoying drinking nowadays?
We've recently stopped drinking, not really for any particular reason. I feel like us and everyone else, but I am a cocktail aficionado. I love mixing cocktails. I actually do miss doing that. But I will say, if you have stopped drinking alcohol in the recent history or whatever, it's literally called a phony Negroni. It comes in a 2-pack, and it is the closest non-alcoholic cocktail to the actual cocktails like taste that it should be that I have come across. So it comes in a really fun bottle. Yeah, phony Negroni. You still need to add like an orange, and it's carbonated, which most Negronis usually aren't, but those are delicious. So I'm a big, big fan of those.
I love that. I'll also seek that out. I love the name too, Pony Negroni. It's just fun.
Yeah, they're tasty.
Yeah. Well, cool. Adam, I don't know what we're going to spend the time talking about on this particular episode, because I don't know if you've heard or not, but Outbound is dead. It is long gone, RIP, had a good run. But so what is Aurum doing now that Outbound is dead and gone?
Yeah, now that Outbound, not only is Outbound dead, I don't know if you've heard of this, Jonathan, cold calling is dead as well.
Oh my God, breaking.
Yeah, I know. It's so, I always say, like, if you're in sales and you don't have anything to talk about, just put cold calling is dead on a LinkedIn post and then do your own ramblings of a madman, and people are going to absolutely love it. Yeah, so from an Outbound standpoint, Aurum, at our core, our mission is to get sellers into more conversations with prospects in less time. So we are a dialing platform, but we also preach and work with our customers to have an all-bound approach. So whether that is social selling, email, video, cold calling. So anyone saying Outbound is dead, like our platform, there's been 300 million calls made on our platform. There's like 12 million made every single month. More meetings are booked on the phone than on any other channel. And it continues to be that way. If you're not doing Outbound, I guess congratulations, you have an amazing inbound engine. But unless you're a company with just like a massive name that everyone knows, I don't think that's going to work for everybody, unless you're like Salesforce or Apollo or whatever it might be. So no, Outbound is not dead, and I'm very thankful it's not dead because I would be looking for a job if it was.
Yes. All right, well, I guess we can't have an episode then. Lots to talk about on that topic. Yeah, it's interesting. So I've been in marketing leadership most of my career. The last company though I was at before the Juice, I was leading marketing and sales dev reported into marketing, which I'm not one to necessarily die on the hill of sales dev should be in marketing or sales. I think it depends a lot on the relationship that the leader of the sales team and the marketing team had, and we were fortunate. It was a really good relationship. But I'm kind of curious, one, do you have a informed or strong opinion on sales dev as part of marketing and or sales? And regardless of that, like, what role does content play in sales dev in your opinion?
Yeah, so you don't realize, we did not talk about this ahead of time. It's going to sound like you teed me up perfectly, but literally I do have a stat for this. So we are working on our 2024 State of Sales Development Report, and we'll get into some interesting stuff about that a little bit, I'm sure, in the process, because that's much more interesting from a content standpoint. But the numbers show that 34% of sales development people currently report into marketing, which is a bigger number than I
anticipated. Yeah.
And so I will say, from our team standpoint here at Orem, we're pretty fortunate. Our sales and marketing teams actually have a great relationship. And I say actually there because that is not usually the case. In fact, I don't know when this episode's going to come out, but we are doing an event at HubSpot's Inbound, big conference that everyone goes to. We're calling it Outbound at Inbound. We're doing our own like tiny conference. It's literally like an hour and a half, but it's literally about what we are calling the dumpster fire relationship between sales and marketing. Because on balance, we have a pretty bad relationship usually. I will say content to me, I look at content and sales development very, very similar, because sales development representatives really are like the front line. At a lot of points, they are the first touch point anyone's ever going to have with your company. And so they need to be up to date on whatever customer stories your content team has recently released, you know, whatever reports you've recently released, like the product messages from product marketing that you want them to be touching on. You know, do you have a new feature that is really, really beneficial for a specific persona, whatever it might be. And so from a content side of things, like, yes, I do think that a lot of people find out about Orem because of our SEO strategy or because of our very weird LinkedIn presence that we like to use. But they are absolutely coming through our sales development team as well. And so if we have a dramatically different voice, tone, and message in our content than our sales development team is using, it is going to be very jarring depending on how people hear about you. So we try to make sure that we're aligned on that front. And then there's a whole bunch more we could deep dive into, like the relationship that we do between sales and marketing and webinar and content follow-up strategies and stuff like that. It's like a whole nother thing. But from a content side of things, we want to make sure that our sales team has the current messaging updated as frequently as possible from a content side of things, so that everything is aligned and just feels cohesive from a buyer's journey standpoint.
I love that you're even like, you're thinking as deeply about like voice and like brand voice being aligned. Cause I think like, yeah, there's all sorts of tactics, but I think you're exactly right that if there's not that thread in the brand voice, that's going to be jarring. That's something I haven't really thought much about, but can be really powerful.
Like I said, I don't go on podcasts often and tell people like, go check out our LinkedIn content. But I will say, like, if you want to have a laugh, go to Orem's LinkedIn page, because we drive a ton of engagement. It's like, it's something like 10 to 12x the average engagement rate that people would say is good. And the reason is like, we're a little weird, but mainly it's that we are just trying to connect with people on a human, like on a human level. You know, we say the cold calling and the phone in general is the best way to have human centric sales. We want to sound like a human being in our content as well. And so I try to use a voice on those, on the posts that we create. It sounds like what we're doing right now, it's conversational. It's like, it's not like highfalutin and like, we're better than you. We know, like, we just want to get you into more conversations. And so we keep that voice and tone with our sales team too. Like, no one wants to pick up a cold call. You're automatically going to be thrown off. And so if we can tell them, like, just be honest, be like, hey, Jonathan, I caught you cold. I know. Can you give me half a minute? I just want to know if this is something that you guys have thought about. And then you go from there and it works. So yes, that is how we try to keep things cohesive.
I'll say it for you. Everybody go check out Orem's LinkedIn. So you don't have to say it. Well, you mentioned this a little bit earlier. You mentioned this state of sales dev report coming out. You and I have talked a little bit about it, but let's maybe spend the rest of the time kind of anchoring on that. I'm so curious because we coach a lot of our customers right now. They're like, what's working in content? And the two things that we say are, one's very tactical, people love templates. Templates on our platform outperform any other content format by a factor of about 3, which I just think goes to show what people are actually doing when they're consuming B2B content. But the other piece that I think is more relevant to this conversation is, I would say, proprietary data, right? I think in the world of generative AI, proprietary data is something that can't be replicated yet. It's the Gong playbook. It's the Aurum playbook. It's what's working. It's what people are interested in. It's something we've tried to imitate. So, and I think we'll get into this in a follow-up question. A lot of work to do a survey and to create data for a piece of content. But what was kind of the anchor for wanting to go down this path and doing this state of report?
Yeah, absolutely. So the 2024 one is our second annual version of this. And I will say that to kind of align with exactly what you're talking about with people, the content that people enjoy and use on your platform, the two words I always use is nuance and exclusivity. So people want that. They want that nuance, like you said, to your point of they want templates. They want basically you to kind of hold their hand and say, do A, B, and C. And then exclusivity is exactly what we say. Like the data people can't find anywhere else. Everyone wants, especially in sales, everyone wants to be like, if I do X, I'm going to improve my connect rate by 20%. So when I built out the first version of this in 2023, like I said, I was coming from Pluralsight. And one of the things that they do very, very well there is Pluralsight, from a content strategy, at least when I was there, we had 3 messages that were built out like 6 months before the end of the year or 3 months. And we knew like, okay, these 3 messages are what we're going to build everything for the next 12 months on. And those became big pillar pieces of content. And so the last one I created for Pluralsight was called the State of Cloud Computing. It was pretty dry. And, you know, everyone always has like a state of type of a thing. And it's a big bet to go to your executives, especially in a startup like I'm at here at Aurum, and say like, we want to create a piece of thought leadership content that is not an Aurum commercial, and we want to spend tens of thousands of dollars on it. But ultimately, it's going to the juice is going to be worth the squeeze, to borrow your guys' name. And so I was able to get buy-in, and I was like, okay, I'm going to create this survey, but it's important to me that we do a third-party survey. So last year we used Qualtrics. This year we used a company called Peer Spectrum. And basically what they do is they work with you, you build out your survey, they do a blind survey of whoever you are looking for and how many people. So we did 1,000 sales professionals. Last year it was everything from individual contributors up to C-suite. This year we actually were more focused on sales leaders. So it's basically everything from like director to C-suite. Basically the impetus was like, if we can create a survey and generate this report, the report itself is going to be pretty valuable. I was betting on past experience, knowing that it would be, but also the content that we could then generate out of the rest of the data that we didn't put into the report would also be very, very valuable for us.
Can you walk us through, because this is something that I didn't think in depth about until I was actually talking to another partner who's also running a survey report right now, but like, how long is this process? What all goes into this process? Because it's fascinating, right? You have to create a survey. You have to distribute the survey. You have to get answers to the survey. You have to evaluate the data. The data might or might not say what you want it to actually say. And then you have to go into the full-on content creation distribution process. Like, what all is going into this effort to create this pillar content?
Yeah, so if people are new to content out there, I try to always think almost like 6 months in advance, honestly. Like, I'm thinking about what our Q1 piece of content is going to be right now. And the reason being, we are recording this at the end of August. The report itself will come out in like mid to end of September. I started this process for this year at the beginning of March. And the reason being was I wanted to find the company we're going to work with, which again was Peer Spectrum is the name of the company. They're similar to Qualtrics, if you're familiar to Qualtrics. But depending on your company, how long it takes for you to get approval to do things like that. Like, our legal team is very, very small. So I know if I want to get approval for using a software, it's going to take a bit. But to your point, we budget like a week to create the questionnaire internally. The company who you work with will probably budget 2 to 3 weeks of going out in the field and getting all of your responses. Then you look at those responses, and so do they, and they figure out, okay, 10% of these were people who were just speeding through the survey to get paid or whatever it was. So then there's another round. So it really is about a month to 5 weeks of getting all of the data. And then, like you said, analyzing the data is like another 2 weeks. And then you kind of get to the point where you start narrative building, because you want to create a report, but you don't want to create a report that's like, don't use our platform, because that's what the numbers say. You have to create a narrative and do the storytelling. So all told, like, by the time it it's ready to go to design and there's no more copywriting edits, it's going to take probably 3 months. Wow. And then again, you want to think through the design because it's a big report. Like the draft that I wrote was about 4,000 words. So it's not going to end up being that long, but how can you put in charts and imagery and visuals that'll keep people kind of reading? So literally 3 to 4 months to create this piece of content. And that does not include like the SEO strategy that we'll have behind promoting it and the webinars that we'll do and the talk tracks that I'll need to create for our sales reps. So it literally is like, this is why I'm thinking about it 6 months in advance.
That's fascinating. So then you mentioned, you know, it's a pillar piece. You did this last year. Will you get a year's worth of kind of follow-up content out of this, or is that 6 months? Is it 3 months? What does now the atomization of this report look like?
If you would have asked me this last year, I would have said probably 4 to 5 months of content, but it really is about a year. So we released the 2023 one in September, and there's another tool we use called Dream Data, which none of these people are paying me. Exactly. Dream Data is really good with showing you like attribution and not just like first touch, but like what was a part of a person's buyer's journey. And so we actually can see our 2023 state of sales development is still responsible for driving closed one like this month. So it will probably be about a year's worth of data, or a year's worth of kind of long tail effect, which is wonderful. And then from like the actual piece of content, like I said, it was a 40 question survey. The report itself it'll live on our website. We'll promote it there. We'll promote it on social. And then it'll probably turn into 30 individual social posts just on LinkedIn over the course of a year. Like I said, it'll turn into a webinar. It'll turn into talk tracks for all of our sales reps. And then what I always do is, depending on like if you work with influencers or partner sellers or anything, I give them early access to the report. And I'm like, use this however you want. You're more than welcome to it. And then we'll also take those 40 questions and we'll create like individual pieces of content off of it. Like we have questions in there about, do your sales reps work remote or hybrid or in office? And like we look at that data and then we compare it to like the success rate of, we do like a cross tabulation and say like, okay, how many of those reps are hitting quota? Well, now we can create a piece of content around, does working in office versus working at home help your sales development representatives increase their quota attainment? So honestly, like a piece of content like this is, if you're creative and you have people on your team willing to think outside of the box, this 40 question survey genuinely could be the only thing we created content out of for the next year if we wanted to. It won't be, but it definitely could be.
That's a little bit of like anecdotal evidence on top of that. We were running quarterly state of reports. So we did state of the B2B podcast listener, state of content strategy, and then we did state of gated versus ungated content. And we were using data from our platform. So it wasn't quite as laborious because we weren't doing surveys, but we were doing a lot of digging and analysis. And that gated versus ungated content, which I thought was kind of an old school battle, people still cared greatly about it. And that piece of content like resonated so loudly and so quickly. We stopped quarterly and we've now let it run for its on month. We published it in December. So we're coming up on a year here soon, but it's like, we're not going to like damper that excitement by creating another state of, we're just going to let that. And I think that speaks to the right data, right audience, like right message can really get a lot of runway out of it.
Yeah. To your point, I went to Saster last year and there was a presentation it was from a CMO. I can't remember where they were from, but they basically said, like, it was a line that stuck with me. They said, right at the point when you're feeling exhausted and really bored about promoting a piece of content is right when the market is actually starting to see it. So I will say, like, you're right. And this piece of content I want to create for Q1, even my boss was like, we probably don't need to do that quickly. I am definitely I have a feeling of like, what have I done for you lately? You know, as opposed to what have you done for me lately? A lot of that comes from having to create like 2 podcasts a week for like 10 years. So yeah, to your point, you can probably, if you're going to create a pillar piece of content like this, where it's very data heavy, like you said, both like your gated versus ungated, or a piece of like a state of, you could probably do 2 a year. You could probably even do 1 a year, depending on the personas and the verticals and your industry.
It's fascinating. So that's kind of everything going into it. you did it last year, you're doing it again this year, so I assume it was successful last year. It is an investment from a time and capital perspective to resource it. How are you judging success of the report?
Like I said, Dream Data is a really impactful tool because it does show attribution. And I will say, I'm a big believer in just sharing numbers. I hate when people keep things behind the curtain. All told, between paid for SEO search and paid ads, and then the actual content and the survey itself, last year we spent about $100,000. To date in Dream Data, I checked last week, the report has generated about $7 million worth of closed ones. We're very data driven in the sense that I'm the head of content at Aurum, but we're a small company. I'm also the content, I'm the content person. So my boss is very much like, we need to make sure you're spending time on things that are actually valuable. And so I do look at this Dream Data and understand attribution very strongly. And so that is how we'll measure success, is we'll look at the cost that went into this one, and then we'll evaluate it in Dream Data and see what it ends up being in about a year. So it was, like I said, it was a big bet that I could get the money last year. It was a little bit easier this year.
Yeah, I bet.
Hey, our ROI is like 70X or whatever it was.
Yeah. Man, that's awesome. Congratulations to you. And it's cool that you are measuring it. I think a lot of times businesses will create content and not do as good a job measuring and knowing that it was or was not successful. Yeah. All right. Last question I'll ask on this topic. Somebody who hasn't done a state of report previously or wants to push their business into moving in that direction, how do you encourage them to kind of get started or go down that path?
The first thing I would say is research. The nice thing about state of reports, I always want to call them something different, but that is the best way to get them to be found. So whatever your industry is, type in state of whatever you're interested in, and you're going to either find competitors or friendly people or frenemies, whatever you want to call them, that will have done something similar. Research what is currently out there. Gong is in our space, but they don't do what we do. We're partners with them in a lot of different things. They do really good content. And so we look at that sometimes and we're like, okay, can we compare ourselves to that way? And then I will say, look, Qualtrics, Pure Spectrum, there's a lot of companies out there that will go and run the surveying for you. Evaluate what you want out of it, and that will dramatically determine your cost. Like I said, it was expensive for us to run the survey because we wanted to have 1,000 people, and we wanted a lot of them to be C-suite and VPs. And just for complete transparency, when you do these surveys, the people are paid to do this survey. And of course, they track did they speed through it? Did they just write C, 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 C for all their answers? Those people are not going to get paid. But that's how you entice people to do these things. And the higher up they are on the org chart, the more money it's going to cost you to get them to pay attention and spend their time doing this. So just evaluate what you want out of it and understand who you're trying to reach. And then also, like I said, just read what else is out there and figure out not just what people are interested in, but how you can differentiate yourself.
It's great advice. Yeah. I think the simple Google search of state of XYZ, your industry
it'll show up.
It will at least inspire you, if nothing else. Yeah. That's awesome. Last question we ask all of our guests. I know you said this one's been rattling around, so we'll see what's coming up here. But what is one unpopular opinion you have as it pertains to B2B marketing?
Yeah, so maybe this isn't unpopular, but
Everybody prefaces their answer that way.
I could feel myself saying, I've listened to episodes, and as soon as I said it, I was like, oh. Okay, so I will say mine is twofold. One, live is better than perfect, and be anything but boring. So my partner, my wife, she is also in marketing she works in cybersecurity, but she also does marketing for a tech startup. And she always says, a thing that is out in the world is better than a thing that and is perfect and just constantly being edited. You're never going to get a perfect piece of content. And like I said, be anything but boring. I always say I want you to feel anything about my content other than apathy. I don't care if you hate it. I don't care if you love it. I just don't want you to forget it. If I can get you to remember Aurum or me for 1 second, then I am afforded the next second. So just whatever you're doing, be anything but boring. And then the last thing I would just say is LinkedIn content and any social content is so fleeting. Just post it.
Yeah.
Just do it. Don't think too much about it. Just put something out there. If it falls flat, do something the next day. So be anything but boring.
Well, I meant to mention this at the top, but the one thing I always say when people say outbound is dead is that kind of my unpopular opinion or take that I will die on is that outbound isn't dead. Your outbound is just lazy and uninspiring. Well, cool. Adam, if people want to learn more from you or learn more about Aurum, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, you can always find Orum.com, O-R-U-M. Like I said, we have a podcast called Bold Calling that we do every 2 weeks. And then just search me up on LinkedIn. Like I said, that's usually where I'm leaving my spicy takes and getting sassy with people. So that's where you can find me.
I love it. Well, Adam, thank you so much for joining us today. Listeners, watchers of the Content Cocktail Hour, thanks for coming back for another episode. Until next time, cheers.
Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by The Juice. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us on app.thejuicehq.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.